Okay, good evening. We're talking about 1 Corinthians 13. Love is a choice, not a feeling. And we're talking about the, if you read in 1 Corinthians 13, starting with verse 4, I talk about love being patient and kind, and I'm going through all of these portions. We've heard them before. We've understood them before, but my question today to all of us is, are we applying them? Is it in the front of your head? Is it in the front of your heart? Are you applying them? Are you aware of the circumstance? Are you having turmoil and struggle, or is there a flow from the Lord? And we talk about love is kind and love is patient. And I have a picture up here. Ted loves this one. For those of you who are listening on the web, the picture is a huge, big German Shepherd, and he's giving a little lick to a tiny, tiny little kitten. It's just an expression of love is kind. And I picture this so touched my heart, because that's kind of Jesus in us. We're just little and vulnerable, and he's big and powerful. This dog could eat that tiny kitten. I mean, one scrunch of its mouth, it would be dead. One just flick of God's finger, the universe would be gone. And he hasn't done it. He is kind. That's the kind of love. He's not talking about the sensual feel good, I love you love. The law of God says that we have to have is his love in us flowing out, not our natural love trying to meet his measure. It isn't going to happen. And love is not arrogant, not exaggerating your own worth or importance in that overbearing manner. And, you know, sometimes when angers come up, we can do that. And, you know, that just shows us we've had judgment in our... I mean, these things are... It's so broad, really. I mean, these are words we use, but it really includes a lot of stuff. Well, you little jerk, don't you know who I am? Whoa, wait a minute. Jesus is the Son of God. And they said to him mockingly, who do you think you are? You think you're the Son of God? And it says, and I love this, and I've written this out a million times, and said he opened not his mouth. He didn't tell them what he thought of them. He didn't tell them what sniveling little rotten, dirty, filthy sinners they were, and how miserable and far away they are from the principles of God. He didn't do any of that. He served God, and God required him to suffer and die. He was filleted. Sometimes we're filleted by words. Sometimes we're filleted by deeds. We have to always keep this in mind. God says he wants us to love. Love one another, and we'll get that scripture in a little bit. Love one another as I have loved you. Ooh. Oh, that hit me when I read that as I was getting ready for this. Love one another as I have loved you. I know he has loved me. I know he has guided me through my errors. I know he has forgiven me in my sin. And not just before I knew him, after I... Anyone ever get angry afterwards? Ever fight with your wife or your husband after you came to know the Lord and had that wonderful salvation experience? Yes. There are many times that we have let the Adam nature rule, and therefore there's sin that abounds instead of the God nature. Now, hopefully, at this point in many people's lives, that's less and less of the Adam nature and more of the God nature coming out. It says that love does not act unbecomingly. That's unsuitable or improper. When you let God's Spirit rule in you, this stuff's going to start tapping you on the shoulder. Now, we have a good sense of humor. You can be lighthearted, but you have to be careful to make sure things aren't unsuitable or improper. And some of the language, it better be changing in the people of God. Some of the stories and the jokes and the little innuendos, they better be gone. And those of us that are in leadership, it better be gone. Gone. And if it isn't, we're going to need to really have to ask the Lord, help me, Lord, bring it to my mind. I want to walk by your Spirit. Your Spirit is never going to have any improperness or anything that's unsuitable. Now, this is another slide that's up here. It's a picture of a German Shepherd that has ripped up has a sign in his mouth that shows a picture that says, no dogs. Now, And my caption there is, this can't be an unbecoming action. The dog just wanted to make sure he got rid of the sign that didn't allow dogs. But it's just a humorous representation of that. We cannot have unbecoming actions. Now, this is not talking about being some self-righteous prig here, as the scriptures talks about it. It's not talking about you saying, oh, please, don't use that language around me. Oh, please, you know, oh, it's unsuitable. You are improper. Well, no kidding. All of creation is improper. God has said no one is righteous. No, not one. So don't go walking around thinking because you know a few things. You need to be proper. You need to be suitable in all things, but not demanding and not demeaning. Now, these are two pictures of my... two of my nephews that were in Iraq in Iraq back in 2005, and they have their gear on and they have their weapons and they have these snarly looks on their face. So maybe not becoming for the, unbecoming for the area, but that's what God is talking about. Not joking around or whatever. He's talking about being proper and being suitable. And there are some people I have been a little bit surprised, I'd have to say, because I work with the chaplaincy. Outside of our church here, I work with the chaplaincy with the Air Force Auxiliary. I have with the Army National Guard. I have with the Tampa International Airport chaplaincy. I'm going to have to say I'm surprised. Some of the chaplains, they're a little foul-mouthed. Some of the chaplains are saying jokes that a chaplain shouldn't. I'm not saying that we're holier than thou. I'm not saying that at all. We have the same struggles, we go through the same things, but we have a higher responsibility before God. And he says, better a millstone be tied around your neck than you lead one of these young ones astray. And those who look to the leadership in the church are sadly dismayed with the financial disrepute that's going on out there, the sexual abuses and things that are happening, the drinking, the drug abuse, the pornography. I'm going, what is going on? Now, I do understand those that love the Lord have given their hearts to him and are walking with them, of course you're going to be a target. Of course the old adversary is going to put the heat on you. But if any of these portions is unbecoming and unseemly actions, attitudes, comments, thought processes have been a part of the habit of the person, male or female, it needs to truly, on your knees, before God, get that out of anything in our hearts. We cannot do that. Now, love does not seek its own, meaning it's unselfish. You know, as I look around tonight, and those that usually are here that may not be here tonight, and those that we serve with in our congregation here, our members and our attenders, I'd have to say we score really high on the unselfish and generous. But even if you are basically an unselfish person and a generous person, there still can be that junk in there. And you're going to know that you don't have a God love in you if you're going to be selfish. I'm just too tired. I can't pick you up. Well, you might be exhausted, but you could maybe call someone who could. I mean, you know, my comfort first is the mantra of the selfish. We need to be very careful. Jesus was not selfish. Now, love does not seek its own, what it wants. Now, you have to be careful, and we've talked about this before. The old devil, if he can't get you with sin, he'll get you with good works. He will exhaust you. So it is not selfish to draw lines around your time frames. It's not selfish to determine what's going on. You need to seek God about it, is all I'm saying. Don't have it based on your comfort or your need. Have it based on what God says. And every one of us have known in the course of ministering to people, you're exhausted, and then God has you minister to someone, and you're wide awake, man. You are wide awake, helping them, driving them someplace, sharing with them, doing whatever needs to be done. But be so careful. Do not let these lines get blurred here. It is not selfish to define your time frames being led by the Lord. And those of us who tend to be kind and generous and unselfish tend to have very busy lives, and we have to be careful. Everybody's going to come to you because you tend to do the helping. So just really be careful. God knows how. Jesus went to bed at night, you know. He wasn't up 24/7. He did go to bed. And I'm sure there were many emergencies going on. He even fell asleep in the midst of the storm, for crying out loud. And all of the disciples were freaking out. Whoa, what's going on? Couldn't you just wake up? Hey, wake up. You got to help us out. He was at peace with God, which made him at peace with himself, which made him at peace with his disciples. And I'm sure the flow of God came through him as he answered them in their anxiety. So love doesn't seek its own. it has to be unselfish, but be careful because the devil's going to want to rob you of health and rob you of rest and rob you of all of this. And you can just really go down fast with good works. Love is not provoked. I got to work on this one. Not as bad as it used to be, but love is not made bitter, sharp, or angry. It's not excited or stirred up. I tend to be more of the type A personality, kind of like the workaholic, kind of passionate, kind of emotional type person. And that's okay. I mean, God called me. God's going to use me within those parameters. He's not going to change my personality. If I'm an extrovert, he's not going to make me an introvert in most instances. But in looking to him, he's going to have me be what's needed at the time. Like Paul said, to be all things to all men. He wasn't talking about sin. He was talking about being led by God. You're going to know. So there's times when Jesus, when he saw what they were doing in the temple. They were defiling the temple with all the money changers and the sellers and all that stuff. And he just cleared them out. And that wasn't based on frustration or anger. That was based on a passion of God and a cleanliness. And he required it. So you're going to be excited and stirred up. When we're sharing with people, we're going to be excited and stirred up. When you're doing the things of God, when you're in prayer, when you're in praise, when you're in worship, yes, you're going to get excited and stirred up, but you're not going to be provoked. There's not going to be that outside entity, that other person that's going to be pushing those buttons. It's the buttons, folks. God, please cut the wires to my buttons that people can push, because you don't want to do that. Love is not provoked. There's a little picture, a little slide here of a little guy, looks like about probably, 12 months old, sitting there, and he's got a little kitty, and he's got the kitty by the tail, and he's getting ready to bite the tail. So, love is not provoked. Even if someone bites your tail, so to speak, someone takes a snip at you, you've got to stand back. The scriptures, you've got to be full of the scriptures. We've talked about this so many times. Get those scriptures in. Because at times when someone's really pushing those wrong buttons and you're getting really ready to be provoked, the scriptures are going to come back. They're like in your heart, in your bloodstream. And God says, be slow to anger, slow to speak, and quick to listen. That's going to come back. And you're going to be able to step back. I talked to someone about, you know, counting to 10. And they had said to me, I think I'll have to count to 1,000 for this one. So you count to whatever you have to. Slow it down. I tend to be in such a hurry. God's been training me and teaching me. I may struggle with it, but I'm going to do it if it kills me. Slow down. You cannot hear God as you're flying past him. Don't get in front of him. And as those that are in a strong leadership positions here of what God has us doing here and out in the community, we're going to have to get this as part of our lives. The flow of God, not the flow of each one of us. Love does not take into account a wrong suffered. Oh, boy, is that big.
That's major.
Love does not take into account a wrong suffered. There is no possibility for the Adam nature to come full force with this. You can do something like, oh, you took my water bottle. Okay, I can let that go. Oh, you stole my van. I can't let that go. You know, so we have to be careful that the magnitude of the offense does not determine whether we're taking into account this wrong suffered. Jesus suffered everything, and he didn't deserve any of it. Some of our sufferings come because of our poor decisions. Many of our sufferings come from the poor decisions of others against us. So, but love, meaning the God love, the God flow love through you, does not take into account a wrong suffered. Now, God is not giving us a message to sweep wrongdoing under the rug. He says to admonish one another. He says to correct one another. He says to discipline yourself in one another. So he's not talking about just let anything happen, cum si, cum sa. Oh, he murdered 12 people. Well, I'm not going to take into account a wrong suffered. No. There is also justice and judgment with this God of love. So his wisdom will come to bear in every single circumstance. There is nothing wrong with having an accountability for someone's wrongdoing. God just says you don't take it into account for a wrong suffered. And it's a picture of two dogs, and one dog has the other dog's, what do you call that, snout? has a muzzle. The other dog is totally covering the other dog's mouth, and it says, I won't take this into account. I won't take this into account. And that's what we're going to have to do if somebody's trying to chew you up and chew you out and do all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's so many examples that the Lord just kind of put in my head. I couldn't even give them all to you. Things like someone lying about you, and then you don't get a job, and that person gets the job that you wanted. You know what I mean? These are real wrongs. Someone selling you something that was stolen equipment, you know, and or someone selling you something, very pricey item, and it doesn't work, and they knowingly knew something was broken and gave you false information. I mean, these are tremendous wrongs. And you have all the relational wrongs that are done, the infidelities and all the lies and this lady Jody Arias is on trial for stabbing and mutilating her boyfriend. And I mean, you have all of these things. Whatever wrong he did against her in her mind certainly did not give her permission to go and totally annihilate him and kill him and take his life. So you can't, that's what God's talking about. Our kind of justice and judgment is harsh, and it is for our own comfort, and we have our own lies and our own excuses. God doesn't want that. He doesn't want to take wrongs into account. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness. When someone gets what they deserve, we don't want that. You do not want to be jumping up and down with joy. Oh, somebody got their just desserts, we say, and you're happy about it. Something terrible happened to them, something unrighteous. Don't rejoice in unrighteousness, either happening to someone else or giving yourself excuse for that unrighteousness. But love does rejoice with what? That word is so unknown today. Love does rejoice with the truth. We have to know the truth. Now, I've been a researcher all my life. I worked in academia and understand the principles of research and comparative analysis and critical thinking, and I am having extreme difficulty in finding the truth. Whether it's about my own government, whether it's about the tax structure, whether it's about who said what, who did what, I don't care what you're talking about, it's so hard to find the truth because somebody says this and then somebody says the exact opposite. Well, what's the truth? Well, Jesus is the truth. That's who I'm going to stick with. And he's the only one that knows the internal portion of someone else. So we do want to rejoice in the truth. And God says that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. So not just the physical truth of the things of life, but the things of the spiritual life. That's where the truth is going to be. And I've said this very, very often. It's not belief systems we're seeking. It is the truth, because some people believe with all their heart there is no God, and some people believe with all their heart there is a God. Well, they both can't be true. True. They're both strong belief systems, but they both can't be true. Whole bunch of people believe that there's many gods. So you just pick those three, and people believe it with all their hearts and write books and live lives based on the principles and the tenets. They all can't be true. Even though that's what we're hearing today, truth is what you make it. Truth is what you say it is. It can't be truth. They believed with all their hearts years ago that the world was flat. Well, that didn't make it true. So we're in a search for truth. And what God says, we need to know first that God said it. And then when you know that he said it, it also says he cannot lie. So that therefore is the truth. I'm not saying to approach God by analysis, because our thinker is broken and you can get off course sometimes. But God knows how to work this thing. We want to rejoice with the truth. And when I find the truth about not just an incident or a person, but the truth and the richness of the scriptures, the truth that God truly loves me, that I rejoice in. The truth that there really is forgiveness and cleansing from the dirt of the separated existence in God to be reconnected with him. Remember that word sozo, salvation. When you look at the word sozo, the real meaning of the word means sewn back together, mended back together. We were torn away from being connected with God by what Adam did. Jesus has us sewn back together. Salvation means you are returned to God, to his cleanness, to his righteousness, to the way he thinks, to the way he feels, to the way he wants. But you're born with that broken nature, which doesn't die when you ask God inside. Now you've got two masters. You've got to keep choosing the Lord and His flow. And God tells us how to do that. Crucify the flesh, crucify the flesh, crucify the flesh. So we rejoice with the truth. Know the truth. These are a couple of slides I had way back when Iraq was first out there. Some of the things that were coming out that the soldiers were doing, they were saying that the American soldiers were bad, and it was kind of be twisted around. So you have to find the truth. And this was just a picture of one of our soldiers kissing a child, and yet someone could put it up, put a little caption here, says a soldier trying to eat a child. GI forces Iraq child to hang by the fingertips, and here he is playing a game with him. So you really can, I mean, it's how you look at it. It's what the truth is. I'll let you read through these. I'm not going to go through each one of these and what their meanings are. This particular one, I wanted to show you this one because it was kind of a powerful picture that came out like around 2005 or something like that when the troops were there in Iraq. And you can't read the story, but the little caption is GI falls asleep on duty while using Iraqi child as body armor. Well, the guy is laying down in a chair, like a lounger, and he's got this little boy, and the story came out some time ago. This little boy was injured, and his parents weren't around. I don't know if his parents were killed or not, but this particular soldier, some medic or something, or some volunteer at the hospital there, this little kid would only fall asleep when this guy held him. So there was a little bond that was there between the soldier and the Iraqi child. But I mean, you can really twist anything, and these were just examples of how the truth can be twisted. Now, love bears all things. Another tough one. Puts up with, suffers with, and it carries this stuff. But not just to put it on your backpack and carry around everyone's problems. This is where people go wrong. God never asked us to bear that. It's His burden. It's His battle. And as leaders, we really need to understand that. It's carry them. You bear them to a higher place. It's a leading of people to the Lord, not a leading of people to you. Don't ever think when you're sharing, when you're teaching, when you're preaching to someone that they're getting it because of how you said it, how important you are, how well you understand the scripture, how close you are to God. It has nothing to do with us. Now, God, you should be building in those strengths, yes, but the power of conviction comes from God's Spirit, and what we want, we volunteered to have it flow through us. So we have to be very, very careful. Constantly back to insight within ourselves, being brutally honest with ourselves and God to make sure this has nothing to do about us. It's truly all about Him. Love believes all things. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be a fool. It yields, it agrees, it trusts, and obeys only from the standpoint that we're expecting God to do something. Working with a young fellow that I'm working with right now, he could be lying through his teeth to me about him and his activities and what he's doing. I cannot. In the natural, I will let that interfere. I will not be able to help him. I will not be able to have God's love flow if I box him in and say, this is who you are, what you're doing. Yet I'm not stupid. I would not be shocked if it came out that that was happening. But if I hold it against this individual or anyone else, I will not be open to hearing from God to help him. Because the whole idea is if he's in a mess, he needs to get out of it. He needs to be connected with God. And right now, I don't know where he is with the Lord. I know he sees people tending to him, ministering to him. Now, I'm not going to be foolish, but I'm going to yield, agree, trust, and obey. I'm going to believe all things. Not what he's saying, but I'm going to listen to the Lord. And I'm going to let God's love come through me. We can't be in this front line of ministry if we're going to make predetermined decisions. Well, you're done. You're over. You're no good. You haven't changed. These are all judgments that come from our broken nature. When God says it's over, then it's over. Until that time, we need to have that love of God that believes all things. And that's talking about, I do believe that God can reach not only this young fellow's heart, I believe God can reach many, many hearts of the people that we work with. So just because someone's a staunch atheist, I just went to that military seminar, was there for a week, and I met some atheists. And they challenged me. And they questioned me. And God gave them answers. and also a little card so you can buy my book. Here, go read this. It'll explain a little more. The MR5, the next generation. I'm going to have a shameless advertisement right now if anyone's listening. You can go on ZulonPress.com. You can go on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and it comes in Nook and Kindle. So you can read that. That's a wonderful explanation of many things through storytelling. But love believes all things. I do. I believe that God has the power to change a heart. Now, the heart might not all be ready. The heart might be open, but stuck in old habits, stuck in old ways, stuck in old thoughts. As long as that heart's willing, I do believe with all my heart, meaning I trust God that He can get a hold of them. And love hopes all things. That's the next thing. A happy expectation of good. Now, sometimes people have called me, you're an encourager. You encourage people. That's God's Spirit coming through. He encouraged me. I'm going to turn around and encourage them. You can do this, but not with your ugly nature. You have to constantly put it away. You have to constantly repent from your sins. Give it no excuse. Get the Word of God richly written on your hearts, not just information in your head. The transformation that's needed can only come from God's Spirit in your heart. And that happy expectation of good. There's a little cartoon here. It's a snowstorm. People walking back from their car in deep snowdrifts in the middle of the storm. It says, repeat after me. Me, at least we don't get hurricanes. At least we don't get hurricanes. At least we don't get hurricanes. So happy expectation of good, even when the worst is happening to you. It's not a willy-nilly, oh, I'm just so happy no matter what goes. No. Hope meaning a happy expectation of good in the Lord, that no matter what's going on, God is going to cut through this and you're going to see the good in each and everything. Love endures all things. It lives courageously under suffering for a long time. We hate that word, long time. I'll put up with this for a week. That's it. I'm done. No. People who are married understand about enduring all things. It really is true. I mean, that the closeness of marriage, really, it's a killer or it's a constructor, you know? And it's so powerful to endure all things. I always say marriage is the best thing God invented for you to practice all the things that He says you need to do, because you're up close. You're either going to battle it or you're going to work it up. So it lives courageously under suffering for a long time. Endure indicates long time. And a little picture of one of our guys there in uniform. Love never fails. God's love. Our love does. It comes to the end of it. When you're ticked off, when you're exhausted, it doesn't stop having a force. It has a real action. It doesn't stop. It keeps on going. That's what it means. Love never fails. It's always there to give that second chance, that third chance, that hundredth chance under the guidance of God, not the foolishness. Otherwise, you're just going to lose all your money. You're going to lose all your stuff. You don't open your home up to anybody and everyone. You just don't do that. You have to learn from mistakes. You have to keep on going. But love never fails. There's going to be an opportunity here by the power of God. Love is a choice, not a feeling. In summary, it's active. This love thing we're talking about is not just this feeling, this little squishy, I feel so good around you. That's an emotional part. That's the phileo love. That's the eros love. That's the stargos love. Meaning the family love, and the stargos is the family love, and eros is the sexual sensual love between a married couple, and God said a married couple. And phileo is the love between friends. God clarified all that. Those words are used in the scripture. The love God's talking about was the love that He has for us. That full, enduring, pure, glorious, perfect love. It's a choice, not a feeling. You can feel not warm at all towards someone and still help them, so it's not a feeling. Otherwise, you're only going to hang around those that make you feel good and don't give you any trouble. Well, God needs us to branch out and reach out to many, many, many people. So we have to choose to love a spouse. We have to choose to love a child. And there's some parents that are suffering tremendously right now because of some things their children are doing against the principles that they've taught them. Sometimes you have to choose to love a parent. You have to choose to love a neighbor. And that can be difficult because neighbors can really get on the wrong side of things. You have to choose to love a drug addict, a prisoner, all who God would bring our way, even those with big questions, even those who doubt, even those who infrequently come to church, and those who never participate in ministry, and those who don't support ministry. we still have to have the doing and the love there. Love is a choice, not a feeling. Now remember, God loved you. And I'm including me in the you. God loved you not because you were lovable, but that was his nature. He cannot not love you. And he will love people right to the edge of hell. And if they choose to step over into it, he will give them permission. He will not force anyone to come to him. He uses a lot of pressure and a lot of power and a lot of conviction and a lot of people, places, and things, but he'll never spiritually force you. That'd be like spiritual rape. He will never spiritually force you. You cannot be forced to love God. But when you do love him, boy, I tell you, and allow his nature, then you'll be able to love people as bad and as rotten as you, just like God has loved you. And God commands us to show that same love to others. And it's in John 15, verse 12. Love one another. How does he say? Not just love one another, period. That leaves it too open to the imagination of man and the Adam nature. He clarifies this love thing. Love one another as I have loved you. And remember, in this love thing, we're not good at it. So what do we have to do, guys? Practice. And God will often bring a number of people around you who you cannot respect. Heck, you can't even stand them. He will bring them around because those are the loving the unlovable is the God love. We have to be almost forced by circumstances. Keep introspective. Keep looking at your own reactions to people. Keep looking at your own reactions to circumstances and situations. Is this you, God, flowing through me? Well, does it meet all the measure of what we just talked about? If it doesn't, then it's not God, it's you. Get out from that. Crucify that. Say, God, I don't want that. I don't want my opinion about this guy. I don't want my opinion about that lady. I don't want any feelings in here. I need to hear from you what to do. It can't be accomplished with that natural love. It has to be God's love in you that can bring any of this to bear. But like we said, all through this, God's love is always tempered with his wisdom. He's not foolish. And some people bring terrible things upon themselves. He'll still love them, but they are going to suffer. So be careful that someone else's poor planning really doesn't make it your emergency. We need to really look to the Lord in that. And God doesn't want us played the fool. He really doesn't. That's why his wisdom has to be in with this love thing. He's like, man, I love him. I love the whole world. Kumbaya, oh my Lord. It's not that. God's love flowing through you. And those that have sinned against you, you're still to have God's love come through you. Now, how can you practice that unless God allows someone to sin against you? So don't be offended. Don't be all turned off. And, oh, this is stupid. I can't believe this guy. Be on the lookout. Have it God's wisdom, not our own suspicion. That will keep us open to serve those that we may not be too happy to serve. The end. God bless you and Bridgely, and God bless you always as we fight the good fight.